morning. First case of the morning be Joseph Ricardo versus Freeman United Coal. Mr. Parker.
May it please the court. My name is Douglas Parker, and I'm here representing the plaintiff appellant Joseph Ricardo and United Mine Workers of America. At issue in this case is whether the district court erred in finding that there is no reasonable interpretation of the party's collective bargaining agreement, the 1998 wage agreement between Freeman United Coal Mining Company, the employer, and the UMWA, the union, that would entitle Mr. Ricardo and his wife to age 55 pre-Medicare supplemental pension benefits. We respectfully submit that the district court erred in two important respects. First, it not only misinterpreted the collective bargaining agreement, but it found unambiguously that there was no reasonable interpretation under which Mr. Ricardo would be entitled to benefit under the pension plan provisions of that contract. Secondly, the district court wrongly found that the Freeman plan documents, which were unilaterally drafted by Freeman according to their obligation under the contract to create that plan, was a negotiated document and was therefore a document that could be construed as part of the collective bargaining agreement. And the district court erred in interpreting it so, despite the fact that the union had presented to the district court clear issues of disputed genuine fact about whether or not that document was in fact negotiated.
Do you agree that if the plan and the collective bargaining agreement are read together, that there'd be no coverage?
We do not agree that if read together that Mr. Ricardo would not be entitled to
coverage. Your case really depends on viewing those two separately.
Well, regardless of whether or not you view them separately, the short answer is no, Your Honor. Regardless of whether or not you review them separately, there's still an ambiguity between the two documents. The collective bargaining agreement provides that Mr. Ricardo would be entitled to benefit. And the plan, when read alone under its terms, states that he would not be entitled to benefit. So there's still an ambiguity between the two documents, even if you read them together. The line of cases that the appellees have cited in their briefs do not require the court to harmonize conflicting ambiguous terms in a collective bargaining agreement and a plan if they're construed together. Simply that when they can be harmonized, they should be harmonized like any contract when read together as a whole. But as I stated before, it's our position that the plan document drafted by Freeman is not a part of the contract and should not be interpreted so.
As I understand it, he was on layoff from Peabody when Freeman hired him, is that right?
Mr. Ricardo was on layoff from both Freeman and Peabody.
But I know he was originally laid off from Freeman 20-some years ago, but he was on layoff. He wasn't still working or whatever.
He was not actively employed by him.
So when Freeman did hire him after the effective date of this new plan, right? I'm sorry, I don't want to miss of the CBA.
They recalled him after the effective date. Yes.
So you do, even though he had this 20-year plus year with Peabody and only a few months with Freeman way back in the 70s, you still, technically, he was on layoff and they recalled him? Is that what you're, when you say you recalled him?
Yes, Judge. There would be no other way for him to have been recalled unless he had retained his layoff status from Freeman during those years, and that's how the party's collective bargaining agreement works.
So if Freeman needed him while he was working for Peabody, they could have recalled him away from Peabody?
they, Freeman would not have had the right to pull him away from Peabody. They would have had the obligation to offer him an opportunity to be recalled. At that point, Mr. Brocardo could have accepted recall to Freeman or rejected it. If he'd rejected it, he would have lost his status as a laid-off employee.
Okay. I don't want to get too diverted, but I just wanted to clear that. It's a little confusing. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. The starting point for analyzing the district court's opinion is the collective bargaining agreement, specifically Article 20C of that contract. Those are the terms that outline the pension plan. In order to be eligible for a pension under those terms, you have to be an eligible employee under Section D1, and you have to have sufficient continuous service under D4. It's uncontested that Mr. Brocardo was an eligible employee because he went to work under the Freeman Agreement and he retired under the Freeman Agreement, and so he satisfied the first sentence of eligible employee. What's at issue here is whether or not he had sufficient continuous service. The contract states that a miner has sufficient continuous service by being allowed to receive credit for his past service in the industry, regardless of who employed him. Mr. Brocardo had 23 years of service when he's recalled, and he meets the continuous service requirement of that provision, which is an employee of the company on layoff status on the effective date of the agreement.
Is that what you call the signatory service, or is that something else?
The past credited service is signatory service. It's sometimes referred to also as credited service.
Okay, thanks.
The sticking point for the company has been the position that he was not an employee of the company on layoff status, although they concede that he was a laid-off employee from Freeman. Well, to understand what it means to be on layoff, one has to look to the layoff provisions of the contract, which are in Article 17. Those terms state that anyone who's on the panel and eligible for recall is de facto is a employee of the company on layoff status. The recall provision itself, Article 17H, is titled, I don't know the exact title, but it's the procedure for recall of employees, quote, on layoff status. This language, similar language, is used throughout the contract, and there's no dispute that Mr. Brocardo was treated as a laid-off employee of the employer throughout this whole, throughout the relevant fact of this whole case.
Is there some sort of a seniority order on layoffs, like those who were laid off first or first called back or something like that? How did he get picked out of, since he was laid off 20-some years ago, how did he get picked out as one to be recalled?
He was 120, he was the 129th person on the panel and the 25th person to be recalled to this mine. He has a seniority date based upon his hire date at Freeman. So his seniority date was June of 1971. And he had an additional requirement. He had to be qualified to perform the job that was being offered. And he met both those requirements. The contract also requires And this was one part of the layoff provision that was new and negotiated into the 1998 agreement, and it was the language that Freeman drafted, which states that laid-off employees must fill out a particular form, a registration form, to retain those panel rights, those recall rights that they had for all those years. Mr. Brocardo did just that, and so under the new language in the new contract drafted by Freeman, Mr. Brocardo was still treated as a laid-off employee of the employer. So not only is this a 40-year history in the contract, new language in the contract renewed that understanding that Mr. Brocardo was an employee on layoff of Freeman, notwithstanding his work history with Peabody. There's nothing in the contract that prevents a miner from having layoff status with two employers in the industry. I'd also note that if there's any issue about the use of the term employer instead of company, company is used in Article 20C, and employer is used in the seniority provisions in Article 17. The very first sentence of the contract states that, and that's on page 19 of the separate appendix, the very first sentence of the contract states that references to the employer are references to Freeman United Coal Mining Company. So there should be no question about what this language means. In Mr. Bricardo's case, the problem arises under Article 20C's requirement that a separate plan document be created and established by the coal company, Freeman. The contract required Freeman to draft a plan document. It gave them the right to draft it as they saw fit and to unilaterally amend the document in the future if they saw fit. And the purpose of this, in part, was so that it would comply and be a part of a larger pension plan that was administered by their parent company, General Dynamics. The one proviso in the contract was that Freeman could not alter the benefits that had been negotiated and the eligibility provisions that had been negotiated. Freeman drafted the plan and sent it to the union, and the plan document went into effect according to the terms of the contract. It wasn't negotiated, and there was no waiver. It was just sent to the union, and then when the union discovered that it didn't conform with the contract, in Mr. Bricardo's case, it brought this litigation. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, and I'll reserve
it. Okay, you reserve that. Onward.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Michael Dornweird. I represent the defendant FLE Freeman United Coal Mining Company and the defendant FLE Freeman Plan. Your Honors, the collective bargaining agreement and the plan document can and should be read together. And when that's done, plaintiff never contended below and doesn't really contend in this court and hasn't contended at argument that plaintiff is entitled to supplemental pension benefits when the plan is construed in connection with the collective bargaining agreement. Now, the nub of the contractual issue is whether Mr. Bricardo, who it bears mentioning worked only 26 non-consecutive months with Freeman over the course of his 30-year plus career in the coal industry, the nub of the contractual issue is whether Mr. Bricardo's non-Freeman coal signatory time, or time spent working with other coal miners, immediately would count toward his entitlement for supplemental pension benefits from the Freeman plan. The plan documents are clear and the CBA is clear. The eligibility requirement for immediately counting non-Freeman industry time are that if the retiree were an active employee at Freeman as of the effective date of the plan, which is the same effective date as the collective bargaining agreement, or if the retiree as of the effective date of the plan had last worked for Freeman, been laid off from Freeman, and had earned more than 20 years of service in the industry. Mr. Bricardo doesn't meet those eligibility criteria. As of the effective date of the plan, December 19, 1998, he was not an active Freeman employee. In fact, he had not worked at Freeman for almost 30 years. His last employment with Freeman as of December 19, 1998 was back in 1971. So he doesn't meet the first criteria under which his non-Freeman time immediately would count toward supplemental pension benefits. He also doesn't meet the second criteria, because as of the effective date of the plan, his last employer in the coal industry had not been Freeman. Rather, his last employer in the coal industry was Peabody Coal Company, the employer for which he worked for more than 20 years.
Does that, and he can be a laid off employee from both at the same time?
It's he can be a laid off employee now from both at the same time under the collective bargaining agreement. So it bears mentioning that Article 10C, which deals with the new Freeman plan and the supplemental pension benefits, never uses the words laid off employee. Rather, it uses the more restrictive phrase employee of the company on layoff status as of the effective date of the contract. That's the language used with respect to eligibility for supplemental pension benefits in the collective bargaining agreement. But to go back to my initial point, when the plan language is consulted, the plan language cannot be more clear on this point. In it's the latter part of section 1.4 dealing with credited service on page 152 of Freeman's appendix, and it states, in addition, any person who initially becomes a member after the effective date of this plan and who had recall rights with an employing unit, in this case Freeman, on the effective date, upon satisfaction of one of the following requirements, shall be entitled to credited service. And the following requirement that's at issue is the requirement that Mr. Bricardo, upon recall to Freeman during the term of the collective bargaining agreement, have actively worked at Freeman for 3 years.
Now, had he come back to Freeman, let's say, what was the effective date?
December 19th.
December 19th. Suppose he'd come back in September of 98, and so he would have been active just for a very short time. Would he then have been eligible, or just because he was active?
Yes, Your Honor. He would have been active under the controlling documents because he would have been an active employee of Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
And after all, in the collective bargaining negotiation, that's who the parties were negotiating over. How are we going to treat our active employees and the employees that have been laid off and last worked for us? The parties weren't negotiating about any coal miner ever to have worked at Freeman over the last 30 years. You cannot build and fund an actuarial sound pension benefit by negotiating over such an open-ended universe of potential beneficiaries. And they weren't. And I think that's clear in both the collective bargaining agreement and in the plan.
Now, under the plan, obviously, if he makes the 3 years, which he intended to do, and then got injured, would he have, were there any other advantages added to this plan, when this plan came into effect, that would have benefited? I thought I remember seeing something, maybe it was in your brief, where the plan, if it bought in, actually had some additional benefits that might have benefited people like Mr. Bricardo.
Well, I'm not sure I know
well,
what Your Honor prefers.
I guess it's because you know, if you've got to stay there for 3 years, which is a benefit in itself. If you come from way off status, if you make it 3 years, then you get in under this provision, which the injury caused him not to get. Was that the only provision that would have affected him?
No. In fact, Mr. Bricardo is himself currently, by virtue of being a member of the plan, a beneficiary of the plan. He's not entitled to supplemental pension benefits based on his retirement at age 55, but he is entitled to an age 65 pension benefit because he became a member of the plan when he returned to work in April of 1999, accrued some service with Freeman, and therefore is eligible for an age 65 benefit.
But the plan, do the CBA cover that?
Yes. The collective bargaining agreement, and again, Your Honor, this goes to the greater point of why the plan and the CBA are the two documents of the same agreement and ought to be read together, because the collective bargaining agreement did cover that. It was negotiated. The benefits that are provided in the plan are provided in the plan because they were negotiated by the union and Freeman during the collective bargaining agreement. The effective date of the plan, December 19, 1998, is what it is as a result of negotiations with the union in connection with the collective bargaining agreement. So the negotiations of the benefit levels are exactly what they are, what the eligible spouses are entitled to, are what they are in the plan by virtue of negotiations in the collective bargaining agreement. So the benefits were negotiated together. And that's not to say that negotiations didn't continue after the effective date, because they did. And I think Mr. Parker candidly laid out the facts that really are undisputed here. In 1998, in December of 1998, the parties signed the collective bargaining agreement. The collective bargaining agreement provided that Freeman would draft the ERISA plan, and it gave Freeman great deference in doing so, provided only that Freeman did not reduce, and this is the language of the collective bargaining agreement, did not reduce the pension benefits, i.e. the dollar amounts. And no one alleged that the plan does that. Okay, that's the language of the collective bargaining agreement. It vests Freeman with the authority and the ability to go draft the pension plan, which Freeman does. Freeman does that in the spring of 1999. On August 17, 1999, an attorney on behalf of Freeman sends a draft of the plan to the Associate General Counsel for the United Mine Workers of America, who participated in the collective bargaining negotiations between the union and Freeman. That lawyer who participated in the negotiations has the opportunity and does review the plan, has communications with Freeman's lawyers with respect to whether the plan is acceptable, asks for an additional document, which is the master plan supplement, the General Dynamics Pension Plans, asked for that document in November of 1999. The document's provided. In early 2000, Freeman's lawyers confer once again with the Associate General Counsel of the United Mine Workers of America, who participated in the collective bargaining negotiations with Freeman, and asks, is the plan okay? Can we finalize the plan? We need to start retiring miners under the plan. And the union makes no objection to the plan whatsoever. Freeman finalizes the plan, begins to retire miners under the plan, and it's not until over 2 years later that the instant litigation started.
Are there other employees that are similarly situated to Mr. Brickard?
There may be, Your Honor. It's
there's no other lawsuits, so.
No current pending litigation. And I recite those facts, and I'll just respond briefly to an argument raised in the union's reply brief. I recite those facts not because they're extrinsic evidence, i.e. facts outside the record that you ought to look at to interpret the contract. I recite those facts because they are the concrete circumstances within which these parties reached their contract. Reached agreement. And this circuit does and court should look to the concrete circumstances within which agreements are made. And when that's done, those circumstances and the precedent of this court shows that the plan document, which is crystal clear, and the collective bargaining agreement ought to be read together. And there are some other reasons it ought to be read together. First of all, the plan document and the collective bargaining agreement rest on the same consideration. That is the mutual promises that the parties made in their collective bargaining agreement. The same consideration that supports the CBA supports the plan document. It's another reason the two documents ought to be read together as part of the same contract. And a final reason is that the collective bargaining agreement itself vested Freeman with the obligation and authority to go out and draft the plan through which the parties contemplated that the benefits would be provided. Under the cases discussed in the briefs, the plan and the collective bargaining agreement therefore ought to be read together. And if I may, just to say a few words about the text of the collective bargaining agreement itself. There was some discussion with respect to Article 17 of the collective bargaining agreement dealing with a panel list of laid off employees, and Article 10C, which is the eligibility criteria for supplemental pension benefits. The two are distinct, and one ought not inform the other. And they're distinct for several reasons. First of all, the key language under Article 10C, which governs supplemental pension benefits, is the phrase employee of the company on layoff status as of the effective date. That phrase occurs nowhere in the text of Article 17 concerning recalling laid off employees. The second reason that they ought to be kept distinct is because they serve two distinct purposes. Article 17 deals with a panel list that is a list of every miner ever to have worked at Freeman, and the company's obligation to offer first to those miners jobs that come up at Freeman. Article 10C governs circumstances under which miners will be provided with supplemental pension benefits. The fact of the matter is, and this is clearly laid out in the MOU that gets incorporated into the 1998 collective bargaining agreement, the panel list was re-registered under the Article 17 that appears in the company's MOU. The panel list was re-registered because neither the company nor the union knew exactly who was properly on it. You had several decades of retired miners that may or may not have been on the panel list, may or may not have had recall rights. And so one of the things the parties did in 1998 was to require that that list be registered. Your Honors, it would defy logic that on the one hand, Freeman agreed to grant all these people entitlement to supplemental pension benefits when in the next attachment to the Memorandum of Understanding required that the panel be re-registered so that the parties knew with more certainty who in fact was on their recall panels. The language is different, the context is different, and so the two articles ought not be mixed. Rather, Article 10C ought to be read with the plan documents. If there are no further questions, I'll relinquish the podium.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Greenwood. I told you, Mr. Dormant. I mean, Mr. Parker.
I'm sorry?
I called you by the wrong name. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right. In explaining the meaning of the contract and the plan, opposing counsel is really explaining what the plan says, but that begs the whole question of what our case is about, which is that the plan document is wrong, that Freeman had the obligation to make it match the contract and didn't, and we dispute their account of what the contractual obligation is with regard to maintaining the pension benefit. It includes eligibility as well. And the plan document is wrong. It wasn't negotiated by the parties, as we've explained in our brief. The fact that they sent it to the union and it was looked at doesn't have any legal significance. There weren't discussions about it. There's no evidence that the attorney who received it consciously understood that the eligibility requirements had been changed. From
no, I don't understand the document that was sent to him.
Well,
why didn't he read it?
She reviewed it, but she just didn't catch the fact that the language had been changed in a slight way between the contract and the plan.
The slight way was significant in the long run.
Well, with respect to Mr. Bricardo.
Slight is your term, however, I suppose.
Well, slight in term, subtle would be a better word choice, mm-hmm. A subtle change that did have significance.
But they had an opportunity to review and complain.
Well, they had the opportunity to review it. It's not clear what would have happened if they'd complained. I think we'd be exactly where we are today, arguing about whether or not the plan matches the contract. I think the more significant question isn't why didn't the union catch the mistake, as much as it is why didn't Freeman alert the union that they'd made a change to the eligibility requirements. They agree that that the contract is silent and that they claim that they added a benefit by allowing people like Mr. Bricarter to be able to get this benefit after 3 years. They claim that because the contract's silent, he would have to work for 10 years under the contract and that they're doing him a favor.
Is that not the case?
No, it's not the case.
Is that a benefit, that 3-year provision? I mean, because that sticks out fairly prominently, doesn't it?
In the plan, Your Honor?
Yeah. I mean, 3 years, that was not subtle. I mean, I don't know what you call it, but that part at least alerts to the fact that this is a provision, you know, you got to work there 3 years.
Well, the language is similar, even though it may or may not stick out. But Ms. Rivlin, the attorney for the union, was told, no, there aren't any differences. This is the same. And, you know, we've cited case law that states where there isn't a knowing and conscious understanding of what has been changed in the document, it does not give a company the right to change what's been agreed to in negotiations in the collective bargaining agreement. Actually, I'm out of time.
That's about it.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Case will be taken under advisement.